With that, please help me welcome our speaker tonight, who comes to us from the Wilkes-Barre area, Chris E.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Chris, a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, Chris.
I'd like to thank Lauren for asking me to come out here and share. You know, it's my first time at this meeting, but I never say no when Alcoholics Anonymous asks me to come out and speak. You know, that's the first thing my sponsor really levied on me from a very early age, this last time around in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I say this last time around, that's my experience. I've had a lot of different experiences with AA, and this last experience has been beautiful. It has been absolutely life-changing for me. And it's all because of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's all because of the God-centered people that show me what the program of recovery is meant to be worked and how to live. And I never knew that. I never knew that. I belong to a big book group out of in Strucksville, PA, Tuesday nights. It's a big book study group, primary purpose group. It's a beginner's meeting. We talk about the big book. We talk about how to build a relationship with God. That's our MO. And thank God for that. You know, like, my first experience, like I said, my first experience with AA at that time, the flavor of Alcoholics Anonymous was kind of different. And, I'm not saying that it was wrong, but it didn't work so well for me. And, in the big book, it talks about God will show us how to build a fellowship that we crave. And, that's how that meeting came about. Me and a couple guys, we just started sitting around a fire, talking and listening to people like Bob Darrell, Chris Raymer, Sandy Beach, and we just sit there for hours and hours and hours, and it just got to a point where we couldn't do that anymore. We needed to take it inside, and that's how that came about. And God works through that group, man. I get to see people come in that group and have their lives totally changed, and that's all because of people in AA. You know what I mean? And, you know, when my sponsor started talking to me about what it meant to be a real alcoholic and what the book talks about as an alcoholic, I didn't know that's what I was until he started talking to me about what that was. You know, I always thought it was different, unique, just like many people that I heard come in here and talk. And, you know, I knew it was, I can relate. Cause like I was very like I was like always on the search for something but couldn't quite put my finger on it, you know. Your approval meant everything to me. I didn't know why, and even then I didn't know it until my sponsor started talking to me about what that really meant, what that looked like in my life. And you know, I was always looking for some sort of approval and your attention and how that played out in my life was very important to me, and bad attention worked well with me. Bad attention worked very well for me. I knew if I acted like an idiot, I was going to get some sort of attention, and I loved attention. I loved attention. And I loved wrong attention. I always liked to get in trouble. I was not one for authority. I did not listen well, especially to my parents. I didn't listen well in school. I didn't listen too well with authority figures. And I ran with that. I ran with that from a very early age. In and out of lockup, in and out of institutions, drinking very early on. And there was really nothing wrong with that. I was living on the streets since the age of 16. My first introduction to rehab and Alcoholics Anonymous was about 15, 16 years old. And like I said, that flavor of Alcoholics Anonymous did not taste well with me. It didn't work well with me. There was stuff being said that I'm pretty sure people were talking about good stuff in there, but I was just too young to, listen. I really didn't care. And, so I kept on doing what I normally do. I drink. No consequences. It took me out of me. It did things for me that I didn't think were possible. You know what I mean? It did things for me like Bob Darrell talks about. It's like that invisible barrier, you know? That used to be in between me and you. I take that first drink and it's not there no more. I was finally able to come out and play. I was finally able to come out and be alive. I was finally able to come out and be a part of life for once in my life. And I loved it. I didn't drink all the time, but every time I had a chance to, I did. And I led to other things. Been in and out of rehabs, detoxes, overdoses, jail, homeless, drinking, and putting other things in my body. That's my MO for about 20-something years. That was my life. You know, on this endless journey of trying to figure out what is this that I'm seeking. Because this whole time I'm seeking something. I had no idea what it was, but I always thought that if I get somewhere or get this thing in my life, that I'll be okay. I don't know if you guys can relate to any of that. But that was me. And it was like my first experience was that was like, well, I'm huge with the Grateful Dead. I love the Grateful Dead. They call me Hippie Chris up north. And so I thought, like, if I just had this big, long endeavor and just tour with the people of Grateful Dead, it's my family, this is great. And then it's like, this is horrible. This is absolutely crazy. And it's like, this isn't working. Like, there's got to be something more. So then I was like, you know what? I need to move out of my area. It's definitely my area. I left the whole country. Lived in Toronto for about four to six months. They didn't want me back in Toronto, let's put it that way. Didn't work out so well. Lived down in Florida. You know, all these scenarios, I try to manage my life and fix myself and do all these great things that didn't work out so well. And drinking and other things came more heavily involved. And I thought, like, you know, one day I'll grow up. You know, right now I'm just having fun. Things are great. One day I'll just grow up. And I had a daughter at this time. You know, that'll straighten me out. Didn't work out so well. Again, being introduced to different flavors of Alcoholics Anonymous, being introduced to different flavors of other 12-step programs as well. And for the longest time, I thought I was working AA. I really did. I thought I was doing the deed. I had the sponsor, I had the home group. I was making your meetings. I was giving you guys rides and eating pizza with you guys afterwards, which I hated to the utmost of my ability. I could not go bowling with you guys one more damn night. I couldn't do it. My sponsor said, just keep coming back, you know, and that's what I did. I got drunk doing it, but that's what I did. I kept going back, and I was like, dude, there's got to be something different. I remember saying to him, like, there's got to be something different. And he's like, I hate you. I cannot stand you. I can't stand the people in AA. I can't do this anymore. He's like, I remember I was like, I can't listen to Susie Lou after 17 years of sobriety talking about her damn cat again. Like, I can't listen to it. Like, I can't do it. And he's like, this is a good spot that you're in, Chris. You know what I want you to do? I want you to double up on your meetings. And I was like, that's not going to happen, man. I'm like, that's it. Nope. You're done. And I left. And I got drunk. And again, in and out. Many different institutions. Many different times of this time wanting to stay sober. You know, I know the first time I actually wanted to stay sober. And I couldn't. I could not. I wrote off AA. AA doesn't work. That nonsense doesn't work. And let's fast forward to my last time I got drunk. Oh, no, I shouldn't say last time I got drunk. This whole experience. This is where God was working in my life. I didn't know. God was working in my life at this time. Back in my area, there's a place called General Hospital. And there was a detox on the fifth floor. I don't know if people... All right, well, there was a detox, and I was a freaking fire in that place. I used to love that place.
Yeah.
It was great. When I first found out that there was a place where you don't have to do anything for 5 days, you don't have to be sick for 5 days, I don't have to worry about paying my bills for 5 days, I don't have to worry about running around for 5 days, I ran to this place. I did not care about staying sober. I didn't care about putting the drink down for that period. I just needed a break. You know what I'm saying? And I would just run to this place, you know, relax for a little bit, send me back on the street, and I was doing the same thing over and over again. And so I'm in this place this last time, and this guy comes in. He's, you know, H&I and commitments and around that area, and this guy was talking about, he was like my age, and people used to tell me when I in Alcoholics Anonymous, when you want what somebody has, you know what I mean? And I didn't want nothing that anybody had in AA. I didn't want nothing. People used to tell me I needed people to find people with time. I didn't care about people with time. Those old, miserable, like, I couldn't stand them. Like, I didn't want what they had. And so this guy was like my age, comes in here. He comes in there to detox, and he was talking about stuff I never heard before. I'm pretty sure people were saying it, but I just didn't hear it. And he was putting it in a way where I was able to relate to it, and he was talking about the 12 steps and building a relationship with God and stop trying to stay sober and stuff like that. And I was like, this guy's crazy. But it was appealing to me. It was very, very appealing to me. And so I actually went up and talked to him after he was done, and I got his number down. And needless to say, I did not stay sober when I left that detox. And I did not call this guy. Right? And I went on another 3-month drinking binge. Homeless again. Nobody wants to talk to me. And it's around November. It was getting really cold out. And I had this great idea. You know, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to move down to Florida again. Screw this. I can't stay sober. I'm an alcoholic. I'm powerless. This is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And then all of a sudden, there's a huge epiphany. He's like, why don't you go to rehab again? And I'm sitting on my mom's couch. I'll never forget this. And I'm having this conversation with myself in my head. It's like, that's a really stupid idea, dude. Like, you've been to rehab how many times? And it's something that, and I just got on the phone. I called. Guy picked me up the next day. And I went to rehab. I really didn't want to stay sober. I just wanted a roof over my head for the winter months. That's where I was at. And because I didn't really think sobriety was real. I really did not think that it was possible. I tried many different avenues to stay sober and it didn't work. And by damn, AA wasn't one of them. I've been on that road, don't work. And so I'm in a rehab. They're making decisions for me. They're like, you need to go to a halfway house. I'm like, that's a horrible idea. I'm like, I'm not going to a halfway house. My counselor's like, here, we're going to have to set up a phone interview for you. So they set up a phone interview. And in my head, I was like, I'll do the interview, but I ain't going. Like, I don't care what she says. I'm just going to do the interview. I'm not going. And so I get off the phone. I do the interview. I'm a prime candidate. So they say or whatever. I hang up the phone. 2 days later, they said, 2 to 3 weeks, you'll know. And 2 days later, they're like, pack your stuff, get going, you're going to the halfway house. I was like, what? I was like, what? I was like, well, I ain't going. They're like, well, you can't stay here. Pack your stuff, you're going. Now, mind you, the flavor of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've ever been exposed to was people, places, and things, triggers, watch out where the people you hang out with and stuff like that. And the last place I got drunk was in Edwardsville, Pennsylvania. Okay? The halfway house they were sending me to was Edwardsville, Pennsylvania. The Clemmer house. And I knew, I was like, well, I'm screwed. I'm screwed. Might as well just get it in. You know, like, get it in. And I get there, and guess who's there? Now, this is the most mind-blowing thing ever. And I'm a spiteful dude. Like I said, I don't listen to authority. I'm very spiteful. I like to poke the bear. That's who I am. And that guy that was talking to me in that detox was a client at the Clemmer house at the same time. And I went right up to him and I was like, I told you AA didn't work. Here you are sitting here just like me. And he just shrugged it off like it was nothing. Now, mind you, in the Clemmer house at that time, you're being told what to do, how to do it, sign in, sign out, a whole bunch of stuff, authority, authority, authority. And I don't work well with that. And there's a whole bunch of guys in that place who are actually doing it, and they were doing it with smiles on their faces. You know? Here's the reason why. That guy was getting them plugged into people outside that were actually doing the recovery aspect of what Alcoholics Anonymous really is about. And I didn't know that. You know, I didn't know that. So I sat down, I was like, so, and that was appealing to me. As weird as that sounded, that was extremely appealing to me. At this time, nobody was talking to me in my life. Nobody. I pick up a phone to call somebody, nobody answered the phone this time. And I got put, he introduced me to my sponsor. And that was it. He started talking to me in a way I never expected anybody to talk to me. He told me, I don't care about your feelings. He's like, you want to get better? We do this right now. If you don't waste my time. And I was like, well, who the hell is this guy? What the hell does this guy know? You know what I mean? And thank God, he's like, I ain't here to sugarcoat anything, and I ain't here to pat you on the back and tell you everything's all right. Because everything isn't. But if you want to get better, I can show you how to do that. And I was like, this guy's nuts. Like, this guy's nuts. And I wanted to give him this whole spiel of like, well, don't you know who I am? You know what I mean? Like, let me tell you everything that I did to try to stay sober. In my head. And I was like, alright, okay, let's listen to this guy. And he starts talking to me about what it means to be an alcoholic. And I was like, okay, I can get down with that. And he starts breaking it down in a way where it's like, okay. And he talks about the allergy that I have when it comes to the drink. And if I get one or two drinks, can I stop? And I was like, no. Like, are you kidding me? It's like, I can't stop. He's like, okay, how about the phenomenon of craving? When you put the drink down, what happens? The obsession that you have. When once you're away from the drink, you get patted on the ass, they send you back on the society, you're no longer detoxed from it, no longer physically craving it. How are you? What does your mind do? And I was like, I don't know. He's like, you don't have brief scenarios in your head where it's like, maybe one day you can do this again? And he starts using that analogy like they use in the Big Book where it's like, you're like the guy that puts his hand in the hot stove. One day you think you can touch the hot stove and not get burned. That was me. Like, I would come up with these crazy ass scenarios on how I could touch that stove and not get burned. So I thought that I can touch it and it won't harm me this time. Every time I went down to the bar, every time I had an idea to go down to the bar, this is what blew my mind, was I never went down to the bar thinking that, you know what, I can't wait to get thrown out the back door tonight. That never crossed my mind. Crossed my mind was, I can't wait to go down to the bar, have one or two drinks with my friends, maybe hit on a couple girls, shoot a couple pool games, and that was it. What happened was I got in a fight with my friends, puke on the girl, get thrown out the back door. That's what happens. You know, this great obsession that somehow I'll be different. I see my brother drink. He's not like me. He can have one or two drinks and put it down. I don't know how he does it. He has a great time doing it, but I could never do that. Then he talks about the spiritual aspect and what the thing, what drives everything. The spiritual condition that I'm in, this disconnect, this endless search that I was on, and the whole thing was this whole God thing. He told me one of the most profound things I still ever heard to this day was stop trying to get sober. He used explicit language and start trying to build a relationship with God. Now that blew my doors in. Because I was always told, you need to fight this every single day. You need to stay sober minute by minute, second by second if you have to. This guy is telling me to stop. He talks about like what it meant to be powerless over alcohol, that my life is unmanageable. He tells me, the first step doesn't say don't drink one day at a time. It says if you're an alcoholic of this variety, you're going to. That's what it means, that I'm powerless. No matter what I do, try to do, get in my life, eliminate from my life, get back in my life, I was going to get drunk. And guess what? I did. No matter what I did or did not do in my life, I got drunk. No matter how much I tried to manage my life or self-propel myself to do better, you know what I mean? I got licked the last time here, this is what I'll do this time. I always fell flat on my face with the best intentions in the world and the great... In great aptitude to do better this time, and it didn't work out. And you broke down the steps in a way that I needed. That I needed. And here's the thing. I'm a spiteful dude. Like, I didn't do it for the right reasons. I did not do this. I didn't do this for my sponsor for the right reasons. Now, I don't suggest you do this. If you're new in here, I don't suggest anybody doing this. But I went to prove this guy wrong. I was like, all right, I'll do your 12 steps. I didn't tell him this. I'll do your 12 steps. But in my head, I was like, I'll do the 12 steps. I'm going to go prove this guy wrong. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. That I'm different. And it isn't going to work for me. And so I did it. And once he started breaking down the third step to me, and I started understanding what the third step really meant, things changed. I started getting sleep at night. And that was all the momentum that I needed. You know, for me as the alcoholic that I am, I needed other things to put me to sleep at night. You'd rather be sleep meds or a lot of alcohol. Without those, it's a three-ring circus up in my head. I'll just lay there. I'll have work at 5:30 in the morning. And I'll be thinking about, if I just said that to her at 20 years ago, things would be a lot different. You know what I mean? Or, like, wonder what I'm going to make for dinner tomorrow. And it just leads to other things and other things. And it compiles on other things. And I'm just like, damn. But he talked about, like, what it meant to turn my will over to the care of God as I understand him. I thought at that point that's what I needed to do. That I'm going to be this straight and narrow, walking this thing with this God figure, and I'm gonna. And he's like, "This isn't what I'm talking about, dude." And he's like, "Are you willing to move forward?" He kept it real simple for me because I like to complicate things. He's like, "Are you willing to move forward? And you're willing to listen to Are you willing to trust that what I'm about to show you is gonna work?" And I was like, "I can get down with that. I can get down with that." And he broke down what it They talked about selfishness and self-centeredness ruin my problem. Driven by hundreds of forms of fear, self-delusion, self-pity, self-seeking motives. I step on your toes, you retaliate, and I get mad at you. That's legit. That's probably my whole life. But at that time, when my sponsor told me that you're a selfish and self-centered prick, I was like, listen, dude, you don't even know me. Like, what are you talking about? He's like, I know everything there is to know about you. And he starts going off into these scenarios and what it meant to be. Like, cause like, I can understand selfishness on a level. It's like if I have a shirt or two shirts and Chris over there doesn't have one and I keep both shirts, that's selfish as hell. I get that. I ain't that type of guy. I'll give that dude that shirt. What are you talking about? But there's always this black book in the back of my brain. You know, the IOU. Remember that time when I did that? Yeah, dude. Remember that? Okay. Or you start breaking down scenarios too. It's like you open the door for the little lady and she walks in. She just say, "Thank you. What do you do?" And I was like, "Well, you're welcome." Or I'll just slam the door right behind her. So what was the motive behind opening that door for? Was it for me to be helpful? No, I wanted her to think that I was a nice person. Selfish. Or if you're driving in your car and you wave somebody through, and they don't go acknowledge that you did that? Oh, dude. Watch the hell out. Like, that's me. Like, so why did I do that? Was I trying to be nice? No, I wanted him to think that I was nice. You know, like, that's selfish to the core. Or the king of all selfish, this was me, and I didn't understand that. It's like, yeah, I'll give that shirt to Chris. Make sure you tell your friends, though. And if you don't tell your friends, I'll make sure they know. I'll make sure they know that I gave that to them. It's selfish to the core. Like, that was me. And I thought I was the most selfless kid in the world. I really did. It was crazy. Because there was a line in the big book even pointed out. Usually he doesn't think so. And that was me. I was like, wow, that's crazy. So we do this whole third step prayer thing, and like I said, I got sleep that night. Claremore House. And we went through the steps really, really quick. He didn't waste any time with me. He said, I'll match your enthusiasm. He told me, if you're willing to give me 100%, I'll give you 100%. If you're willing to give me 50%, I'll give you 50%. If you want to give me crap, I'll give you crap too. So whenever he told me to write something, I did it. So I go into the fourth step, I see my character defects and who I really am. I tell this man everything in 5, 6, and 7, I give it to God. And I start making my amends. And I didn't even know how important that was until I started doing them. Until I started having an experience of what it was afterwards. Trust me, none of these my amends that I did were what I expected. None of them were. The ones I thought that were going to go bad went great. The ones I thought were going to go great went really bad. I have a lot of experience with a lot of different avenues of all that and having a lot of experience with making those amends. And it was crazy. I remember I go on a lot of commitments and I share a lot in detoxes and rehabs and they would always ask, how did you know that you had a spiritual experience? And I was like, I didn't. I had no damn clue that I had a spiritual experience until my grant sponsor pointed it out to me. I used to belong to a home group called the Rule 62 group, and it was up in Lake Silkworth, right? Okay, so Lake Silkworth up in my area, and it was a beautiful day. It's in the mountains next to the lake. It's a beautiful area. It's like summertime. We're all playing hacky sack and frisbee outside in this huge parking lot, and usually I'm not sociable. Like I don't like people. You know, I just don't like people, especially people in AA. Like, get the hell away from me. Like, don't give me a hug. I don't want it. So I'm hanging out. I'm doing all these things. And my grand sponsor, he's like, yo, come here. And I was like, what the hell did I just do? What's going on? And he's like, there's something different about you. What's going on? And I was like, I don't know, dude. What's going on? He's like, you're smiling a lot more. He's like, you're actually having conversations with people. I see you seeing what you're trying to talk to newcomers and being a part of. And I was like, yeah, I guess. So you go inside for the meeting, and on the ride home, I'm sitting in the back seat of my buddy's car. And for the first time in my life, I realized I haven't thought about a drink the whole damn time that I was doing this with my sponsor. I had no idea. So I didn't even know that I had a spiritual experience. Everybody else knew before me. It was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. So then he started getting me into the principles of 10, 11, and 12. And that was fantastic how he got me into 12. Because I went through the steps really quickly. Like I said, I was about 3 months sober, 4 months sober. And he's like, you know that detox you go to? Right? He's like, you know that detox you go to all the time in general? And I was like, yeah. He's like, they need speakers over there. I was like, that's cool. Saturday at 10 a.m. I was like, all right, cool. He's like, so I'll meet you there. And I was like, what? I was like, I don't have a year sober. I can't help nobody. He's like, I didn't ask that. He's like, they need someone to talk to or someone to listen. They need someone to come in, bring a meeting. You're going to go and do it. I was like, I can't even help myself. How can I help them? He's like, again, I didn't ask that. I'll see you there at 10 o'clock. And that's what I did. I showed up at 10 o'clock, the most fear of my life, go in and talk a bunch of drunks that probably don't know me, but I was so feared up, I didn't know what to do. So I just started talking. I don't think I said anything that was sounded reasonably right at all. And people come up to me saying they got a lot out of it. I'm sure they lied, but that was it. And they were like, okay, we'll see you next week is what he kept on saying. I was like, I thought I was done. Like, you know what? All right, I'm done. You know what I mean? Like, all right, get that off my back. And he's like, yeah, we'll see you again at 10 o'clock on Saturday. I was like, what is with this guy? I'm like, what is going on with this guy? The crazy thing was, like, thank God for that guy. Like, he knew better for me than I knew better for myself. He knew that I needed to do that. He knew that I needed to carry the message. He knew I needed to pass it on. He knew I needed to continue to carry something. In order for me to keep it, I needed to give it away. I didn't know that. Especially then, I didn't know that. So I just did it. And I continued to do it. And the stuff I used to hate to do, I love doing to this day. Granted, don't get it twisted. There are some days I don't feel like doing a lot of different things for AA. I'll be the first one to tell you. But I do it anyway. The one thing that rings in my head, my sponsor now, he tells me this to this day. It's not about doing it when you want to do it. It's about doing it when you don't want to do it. It's not about being of service when you feels comfortable for you, which I like to do. It's like, oh, I'm of service today. I'm going to be helpful today. Work around my schedule. Oh, yeah, I can do that. You know, that works out. All right. You know, football game's on? Oh, no, not tonight. But it's all, that's when it counts. I heard Clancy talk about that too. He talks about how he something was in his, someone just kept on telling me to make a phone call to this one guy, make this phone call. He's like, not, and he's having this conversation in his head, and he's like, not during the game, dude. I'm not doing it during the game. He's like, I just want to sit down, watch the game, relax. And it's just something in the back of his head. So he did it. Ended up changing this whole man's life around. I heard Bob Darrell talk about it too, like doing the commitments. He said he was going into the jail to take on commitments, and this was like true from like this whole experience. Like, he never, because I always felt like Bob, when Bob's like, I don't think I should do this anymore. People aren't listening to me. Like, this is, maybe I should just pass it off to somebody new. Like, maybe someone new can carry this message, rejuvenate these people. But he kept on doing it. And he kept on doing it. He kept on showing up on Sunday. And he was doing this, one of his conference talks. And he said, this one guy came up to me. He's like, you look familiar. And he's like, yeah, you come to that prison. He's like, oh, yeah, every Sunday. He's like, well, you were one of the inmates. He's like, no, I was a prison guard. He's like, I've been listening to you for years, and I realized I had a problem. You never know who you're going to help. And that's true for me. You never know who you're going to help. The people that you don't, like, also, though, I need to bring this to my everyday life. And I bring this to my family, and I bring this to my workplace, and I bring this attitude of helpfulness, and I try to do this to the best of my ability. Sometimes it's really hard. But and you can see people asking for help. People you would never expect to ask you for help are asking you for help. Prime example, my daughter's mom. I hated her. She hated me. We did not get along. I don't think we talked that much. Circumstances after circumstances, trying to be loving, tolerant. That is our code. You know what I mean? Being loving, tolerant. You know, so sometimes loving, tolerance, just dead silence and leaving her alone. After a while, she just asking for help. How she can get some help. And that's mind blowing. Why? Like, that's crazy. That's how God works in my life. That's how God works in my life to this day. You know, I am not the perfect member of AA. Thank God. I used to think that I need to be walking some sort of way on a spiritual basis for years, and I would fall flat on my face every single time. My sponsor tells me that that's selfish, egoic thinking. And it's true. Like, who are you to think that you are above not being human? Who are you to think that you're not above being flawed or make mistakes? My ego tells me, well, if I'm living on a spiritual basis, I shouldn't be doing like this. But, like, my whole life is that. Bob Darrell talks about what am I, his whole experience up to this point is step 6, what I'm willing to let go. That's my experience. I like to hold on to things sometimes. Way longer than I should. And then when the pain gets great enough, I'm sure I'll let go like I've done before. Hopefully, God willing. But But those are experiences I grow with. You know, I've been through a lot of crazy experiences in AA, of a lot of different things that happened in my life that a lot of people didn't think that I would get through. I didn't think I was going to get through a lot of them. A lot of deaths, a lot of personal deaths to me. And people would just show up at my door, and I hated them for it. They would just show up at my door and like, hey, we're going to a meeting. I was like, leave me the hell alone. Like, I'm not going to a meeting. Like, hey, we're going to a commitment. Leave me the hell alone. I'm not going to a commitment. But I went up and did it anyway. I was told to act better than the way I feel. And sometimes that's harder than what you think. But that's what I did. And I got through these things. You know, trust God, clean house, help other people. Trust God, clean house, help other people. People, like, that was it. People thought that people come up to me like, what did you do to get through that? And I was like, trust God, clean house, help other people. It is really that simple. There's nothing else added. There's nothing else taken out. Everything that was taught from the beginning and continue to practice in my everyday life, that's it. The thing is, am I still willing to do that? Thank God I'm still willing to do that. Because of that, people actually want me to sponsor them. That's crazy. Like, I don't understand how an Irish gutter junkie, alcoholic, they want my help. That's crazy. That still blows my mind to this day. I am a father to my daughter today, which is amazing. She's actually 14 now, and it blows my mind that she's even that old. And she actually wants to be a part of my life. I learn more from her than I think she learns from me. Like, she is the total opposite of me. She actually goes to school and likes it. She has great grades. And she is a role model that I wish I can live up to. Prime example. One of the greatest things I've ever seen. One of the greatest experiences I've ever seen from my daughter was from my daughter. We were at my brother's house, and, you know, the kids are all hanging out. My nieces and nephews, she was hanging out. They're outside playing. And I go outside, and she's sitting there on the porch swing by herself. And I'm like, what is going on? Like, why are you sitting by yourself? And she's like, well, they're going around knocking on people's doors and running and throwing things at people's cars. I didn't think that was right, so I just sat here. And I was like, well, I would have been doing with them. You know what I mean? Like, I would have been with them. You know what I mean? Like that's crazy. Like, I wish I was able to do that. Like, I learned from her. And she doesn't know, I don't think she knows that, but, like, it's a beautiful thing. I'm a father, I'm a son to my mom. In a way that I never was before. It was all about take. And now it's for me to try to, I, to the best of my ability, be there for her. I'm employable today. That's crazy. I have the same job as I did when I was getting drunk. And you talk about being maximum service. I really need to be maximum service there, and that immense was crucial. I don't even know how I still have the same job to this day, to be honest with you. I'm the poster child of what not to do in the workplace. I used to lay myself off. I showed up when I wanted to, and I left when I did show up when I wanted to. I was not great at what I did. I think they felt sorry for me. I really do. But many, many warnings and many, many this, that, and third. But by this time, like, I was told to practice this stuff in the workplace too. I need to go maximum service to my employer. So, like, once I started doing that whole turnaround, like, they actually want me there. You know, like, that's crazy. And I can actually be employed. They can actually count on me, which was never part of my life at all. You know, this whole thing about purpose and this purpose-driven life and, like, this whole time, like, I never had any type of purpose whatsoever. None. I would just see what I can get from you. You get to choose how that happens. You know what I mean? Either you give it to me or I'm going to take it. That was my mentality. You get to choose how that happens. And I thought I lived like this great life of like some sort of purpose, but it was like there was something missing. I remember living in a basement for the longest time, and you know, you look out of, and just a true story, you know, looking out of a window. You know those windows in the basement on top there? And I would see everybody getting up for work because I would be up all night. That's what I do. And I see people going up, getting up to go to work, being fathers to their daughters and, you know, doing whatever normal people do, whatever the hell that is. I don't know, but I wanted to do that. I wanted to do that. I wanted to be a part of that, and I was never able to be a part of that, no matter what I did or tried to do. You know, even with, like, I grew up in a very religious household. My mom to this day is a saint. I don't think she's ever cursed in her life. And I'm not lying. And I, like I said, I like to poke the bear and see what I can do to get her to curse. Never once. So, like, I grew up in this household, and I get to see God work in people's lives, but it never worked out for me. And, like, no matter how much I tried to be moral, no matter how much I tried to do the next right thing and put the next foot forward and just be a productive member of society or whatever the hell that meant, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. Even for my daughter, I couldn't do it. And who would have thought coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what was given to me? Purpose. For the first time in life, purpose. You know, they talk about giving, like, the whole thing is, like, I heard Tom Flynn talk about it, pass it on. That was it. That's all he used to say, pass it on, pass it on, pass it on, pass it on. It's actually on, that's what's engraved on his tombstone, pass it on. Like, that's it. Sandy Beach is it one giant act of letting go and pass it on. That is it. And by doing that, I gained some purpose in my life. I'm not saying I know all the answers. I'm not saying I'm some sort, but I'm actually a part of this. For the first time in my life, I'm a part of something where it's actually meaningful. And God lets me be a part of it. God sees fit that I'm, like, He gives me the gift of being a part and seeing people's lives change. Like, that's mind-blowing. I don't care what it is you put in your body. I don't care where you come from or what you've been through. If you haven't gone through this process and started taking somebody else through this process, you've never experienced what this life is really about. Like, I don't care. Like, once I'd seen people that actually get this, like, I take someone through the book and you see them get it. You know, and you see them get it. And then they're starting to talk to somebody else. So I'm beaten and broken, just like you when you first walked into AA, and you see them get it, and they give it to somebody else. I don't care, man. There's no greater feeling in the world. And you get to be a part of that. That's great. That's amazing. A life beyond my wildest dreams. You ever told me I was sitting in a church basement talking to you guys about how God changed my life? You're nuts. You're absolutely nuts. But who would have thought that by me finding God would be in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and with drunks? That was the last place that I would have ever expected that to happen. Ever expected that to happen. So if you're new, welcome. I highly suggest you get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. Involved in AA. You know, when I first started coming in here, my first type of flavor of Alcoholics Anonymous, I really thought that I was doing well. If my attendance record was fantastic, that I was going to get somewhere. And it was pretty good. I didn't miss a day. And I would hear people whispering in my ear, "Hey, it's a program of action, buddy." And I would just sit there, nod my head, drink your coffee, and leave. That's what I did. You know what happened? I got drunk. I'm not saying that's your experience, but that was my experience. It's a program of action. If I'm not doing nothing, I ain't getting nothing. That whole how it works, you know, like, Half measures avail me nothing. I don't get half. I don't get half. And if I'm not moving my feet in AA, I'm like stagnant water. And after, once water stays still long enough, I get very stagnant, and I get very putrid, and I get very poisonous, and I'm not fun to be around. I'm not fun to be around. I know from experience. But like, if once I get plugged into this process, and I work this process, the program of recovery, the 12 steps, and I start giving it to somebody else, things change, and it can change in your life as well. That's all I have. I'm a little short.